Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Cheva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tatojayam Udirayat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 4, Chapter entitled The Four Categories of Annihilation, Text Number 5 and 6. Dri-parade. Tu. Atikrante. Brahmana. Parameshtina. Tada. Prakritaya. Sapta. Kalpante. Pralayaya. Vai Dri Parade Twati Krante Brahmana Parameshtina Tada Prakritaya Sapta Kalpante Pralayaya Vai Dri Parade Twati Krante Brahmana Parameshtina Tada Prakritaya Sapta Kalpante Pralayaya Vai Dri Parade Two Paradas
Two
And
Atikrante
When they have become completed
Brahmana
Of Lord Brahma. Parameshtina. The most highly situated living entity. Tada. Then. Prakritaya. The elements of nature. Sapta.
Seven.
Kalpante.
Our subject.
Pralayaya.
True
destruction.
Vai.
Indeed. Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. When the two halves of the lifetime of Lord Brahma, the most elevated created being, are complete, the seven basic elements of creation are annihilated. Translation responsibly. When the two halves of the lifetime of Lord Brahma, the most elevated created being,
are complete.
The seven basic elements of creation are annihilated. Verse 6. O King, upon the annihilation of the material elements, the universal air, comprising the elemental amalgamation of creation, is confronted with destruction. Purport. It is significant that Shukadev Goswami, the spiritual master of King Parikshit, is broadly discussing cosmic annihilation just before the death of his disciple. By attentively hearing the story of universal destruction, one can easily understand one's personal departure from this temporary world to be an insignificant incident within the gigantic scope of the total material manifestation. By his deep and relevant discussions of the creation of God, Shukadev Goswami, as an ideal spiritual master, is preparing his disciple for the moment of death. Omigyan timarandasya ginunjana shalakaya chakshurnalitam yena tasmai Sri Gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam tadati svapadonkitam vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhu vyevacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishna Debhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So a large portion of the Bhagavatam is dealing with the creation and the destruction of the material world. Jiva Goswami points out, and Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, they point out that it is very beneficial to hear about the destruction and the creation of the material world. Because by hearing about the destruction and the creation of the material world, we become detached from the material energy. That's why the Bhagavatam is spending, or Shukadev Goswami is spending so much time describing both the annihilation and the destruction of the material world. It is meant to breed detachment. Otherwise, one could say, why is so much time being spent on this subject matter? Maharaj Parikshit only had 7 days to live, and having only 7 days to live, Shukadev Goswami could have gone straight to the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam and spoken about Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto, and that would have been very satisfying for Maharaj Parikshit, just to hear about Krishna's pastimes. But because the Bhagavatam is being spoken primarily for our benefit, for the benefit of the conditioned souls who were to come and hear the Bhagavatam many thousands of years after Parikshit Maharaj heard it, then Shukadev Goswami is speaking in great detail about the material energy, so that we become properly detached from the material world. Otherwise, at the time of death, one may still be attached to the material energy. Now, Prabhupada explains in the introduction to the Bhagavatam, he says, by the end of studying the first 9 cantos of the Bhagavatam, by the time you get to the 10th canto, you should be a God-realized soul. That means you should fully understand the absolute truth by studying the first 9 cantos categorically. So if one studies the first 9 cantos very carefully, under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, Prabhupada says you will become God-realized. Which means when you go into Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto, which is the summum bonum, the param satyam, the absolute truth, then one will understand those pastimes from the spiritual platform. Therefore, Shukadev Goswami speaks the Bhagavatam categorically, systematically. It is not spoken whimsically. And sometimes it's hard to understand the Bhagavatam's thread, why it speaks in a particular way, because it doesn't go chronologically. The Bhagavatam is not spoken in a historical fashion, that we don't start at the creation of the universe then gradually come down through time. But the Bhagavatam goes back and forward throughout the universe to different planets, different time scales, different pastimes, and it seems like it's unrelated. Sometimes you can't understand why is the Bhagavatam going in this particular direction like that. But the purpose is, if you study it very deeply and carefully under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, then you'll understand that the Bhagavatam is detaching us from the material world. So by the time we get to the 10th canto, we will be fully detached from the material energy, and we will be God-realized souls. That is if you study it properly. If you study it, and if you assimilate each of the lessons which are being taught in the Bhagavatam as they go. As you study through the Bhagavatam, if you are realizing each point, then by the time you get to the 10th canto, you'll be God-realized. And then you'll get the full benefit of hearing about Krishna's pastimes. So, the third canto especially, and the second canto, but especially the third canto, they speak in great detail about the creation of the material world and the destruction of the material world to some extent. And now, the destruction is being spoken out about once again. So as it says here in this purport, in this sixth verse, discussing the cosmic annihilation just before death of the disciple is preparing the disciple for the moment of death. So death is inevitable for each of us. All of us will die. The mortality rate since the first day of creation is 100%. Everyone has died so far. Everything is, they have a saying in English, as sure as death. There's no avoiding it. It's just a matter of when it will come. For most people, it will come in a natural way, as the body decays at the end of life. For some people, it will come untimely. But it must come. And we must be prepared for the moment of death. So therefore, in order to prepare ourselves for the moment of death, we practice sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti means we are practicing devotional service. What is that preparation for? It is preparing us for the time of death. That is the entire point of our sadhana. Because all of our sadhana will be tested at the time of death. Because what is the point of sadhana? What is the point of practicing the different items which we practice? It is to bring about remembrance of Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami says that all of the devotional practices which we follow, the viti and the nisheda. The viti means the positive injunctions, the things that you must do. You must chant 16 rounds, you must hear the Bhagavatam, you must associate with devotees, you must worship the deity, and you must reside in holy places. These are the principal items of the viti. This means the things that you must do. That is called vaidhi, sadhana bhakti. Things that you must practice every day. Then you have the nisheda. Nisheda things, the things means the things that you must avoid. Right? You must not take intoxication, have illicit sex, eat meat, and gamble. And there are other injunctions which are given by Rupa Goswami also in the Nectar of Devotion. So there are various things which we must avoid, and there are various things which we must do in order to remember Krishna. Now, what is the point of doing all of these things? Why do we follow so many rules, so many regulations? Why do we have so many injunctions which we must follow? Why are there certain things that we must avoid? Because Rupa Goswami says we must always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. So by doing the positive things, you will always remember Krishna. By avoiding the negative things, you will never forget Krishna. That is why we're asked not to do these particular things. That's why we do not eat meat, do not have illicit sex, do not take intoxication, do not gamble. Because they make you forget Krishna. Right? Prabhupada says that sinful life and devotional service go ill together. You can't practice both simultaneously. You can't have illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, gamble. You can't do those things and remember Krishna simultaneously. Right? It is not possible. These activities, they deteriorate spiritual life. They destroy spiritual life. They gradually lead you to a point where you forget Krishna. They gradually remove your consciousness, take your consciousness away from Krishna. That's why we must avoid those things. That is called the nisheda. So that means these things will make us forget Krishna. And the injunction is never forget Krishna. So then one may ask, well, it's very difficult to give up those things, which is true. Just like there was one of Prabhupada's godbrothers went to London and he was preaching. And do you remember the name of the Lord that he was preaching to?
Zetland.
So he was preaching to Lord Zetland, who was a so-called aristocratic English gentleman, like that. So he said, I want to become a Brahmana, because he was understanding something about Vedic culture. So he said, I want to become a Brahmana. And Prabhupada's godbrother said to him, you must give up illicit sex, stop taking intoxication, stop eating meat, and stop gambling. And Lord Zetland said, it is impossible. He could not imagine life without that. So it is undoubtedly difficult to give these things up. Prabhupada, we actually read in the fifth canto a few weeks ago, Prabhupada says, the conditioned soul is naturally inclined towards illicit sex and meat eating. People, they want to do that. That's why you come to the material world. You come to the material world to enjoy sex and to eat flesh. No one does that in the spiritual world. So that's, you come to enjoy separately from Krishna. And these are the principal activities which people perform to forget Krishna. They want to enjoy separately from Krishna. It's very difficult for people to give those things up. Many of us, most of us, engaged in those activities, or many of us engaged in those activities before we came to Krishna consciousness. I know for myself, I engaged in all of those activities before I came to Krishna consciousness, to some degree. Not greatly, but to some degree. So, even now, sometimes I'm amazed that I've given those things up. Sometimes I think, how do I give those things up? It's not by my own strength that I've given those things up. Because I couldn't have given those things up by my own strength. So therefore, it is by the Daivi Prakriti, or by the internal energy engaging in devotional service, that one gains the strength to give those things up. As Krishna says in the Gita, Param Drishtva Nivartate, you can give up lower things only when you experience something superior. When you get the higher taste of Krishna consciousness. So when you get the higher taste of Krishna consciousness, easily you can give up those things. They become insignificant. They become unattractive. So much so that now we think of those activities, some of those activities, and we feel not even attracted to those activities. Now, that is the strength of Krishna consciousness. So Rupa Goswami says, always remember Krishna. How do you always remember Krishna? You have to constantly engage in positive devotional activities. What are the positive devotional activities? First of all, you chant the holy name. Second of all, you associate with pure devotees. Third of all, you hear the Bhagavatam regularly. Fourth, you reside in holy places. Fifth, Srimurti Shraddhaya Sevan. You worship the deity regularly. These are the activities which attract us away from the material energy. So when one absorbs one's consciousness constantly in these activities, then one becomes purified in consciousness. These are the five most powerful items of bhakti. Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Devotion, they are so powerful they can produce ecstasy even within neophyte devotees. That's how powerful these activities are. The devotee can feel completely ecstatic or completely blissful just by engaging in these activities. Now, what is the proof that one has come to the level of ecstasy? The level of ecstasy is primarily indicated externally. One will have tears in the eyes. You see, Romansha Kampashru Taranga Bhajo. It is said that tears will come from the eyes. You will cry when you hear the name of Krishna, or when you see the deity of Krishna, or when you hear the pastimes of Krishna, or when you go to the holy places where Krishna performed his pastimes, or when you associate with very advanced devotees. Naturally, tears will come from the eyes. Naturally. It produces ecstasy, even in neophyte devotees. So this is how we overcome the influence of the material energy. You overcome the influence of the material energy by positively engaging in these viti, or these devotional activities, which bring you towards remembrance of Krishna. So, it is necessary for us to engage in these activities so we can remember Krishna. But, simultaneously, we still need a certain amount of knowledge or a certain amount of hearing, the type of hearing. I'm just trying to think how to say it. We still need to hear about the material energy simultaneously. That's why when you read the Bhagavad Gita, how does Krishna begin the Bhagavad Gita? Right, from verses 11 to 30 in the second chapter, Krishna speaks about jnana, the difference between matter and spirit. Right? Because that is necessary to develop detachment. From jnana comes vairagya, or detachment. When one has knowledge, then one develops detachment. So therefore, it is necessary, especially for us, because we are still attached to the material world, to hear about becoming detached from the material world. To hear about the creation and the destruction of the material energy. It will breed detachment within our consciousness if we meditate on it very carefully. So it says here in the purport, by attentively hearing the story of universal destruction, one can easily understand one's personal departure from this temporary world to be an insignificant incident within the gigantic scope of the total material manifestation. So, what is the scariest thing that each of us will face in this lifetime? Death, right? It's not a particularly attractive proposition for the conditioned soul. You will die. You know, it's not something people like to dwell on or think about. It is actually fear personified for the conditioned soul. It creates terror within the heart of the conditioned soul. We're not particularly comfortable with the fact that we're going to die. Mainly because it's not a pleasant experience. So, we're hearing about it here within this particular purport, the destruction of the universe. So our death is just an insignificant event within the total universal order. Within the total universal time scale. Within the complete scheme of God's creation. Our death is insignificant. Something which gives us so much fear is just an insignificant incident in terms of time, in terms of space, of what takes place in the material world. Just like so many people die every day in the material world, and it has no effect on us whatsoever. Just like a month ago, then how many people was it from that Japanese tsunami? I think it was 28,000 people, did they say, the final figure. Right, and then a few years before that, then we had the other tsunami, 250,000 people. Within minutes, such a large amount of people. But it means nothing to us. And on the universal scale, it's actually a very insignificant event. But our own death gives us complete terror and fear. So the Bhagavatam is trying to put it back into perspective. It's actually an insignificant event. It's not something to be particularly concerned about in one respect. In another respect, it's going to be the most important day of our life. You think your marriage is important. You have a big, you know, festival. Just like, are they married yet or are they getting married?
Next week.
Next week, is it? Okay. So basically you can't look at the media at the moment without the most watched event in modern history is going to be the marriage between what are their names? I'm forgetting. Kate and William. Kate and William. And just because I'm tired. I actually know who's getting married. I'm just tired. I can't remember. You know, it's drummed into us. Kate and William, Kate and William, Kate and William, 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 Kate, William, Kate, William, Kate, William, Kate, William, William, Kate, 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 William, Kate. It's the Maha Mantra at the moment. For the entire material world, it's the mantra. Everyone's just mesmerized by this event like that. So it is seen as being the most important day of their life. That's why there's such a big commotion about the event. But actually, it's not the most important day of anyone's life. Right? The marriage is important. No doubt it's going to shape your life greatly. It's going to be a very significant event. That's why there is such a big commotion about the whole event. Obviously, it's going to have an effect on your life. But it's not the most important day of your life. The most important day of your life is going to be something completely different. And it's going to be the time that you die. That will be the most important day. Now, the entire point of our sadhana is to ready us for that moment. The entire point of all of our devotional activity is to ready us for that point. Therefore, it is necessary that devotees learn to chant the holy name of Krishna properly. Because, you see, many devotees, many of us are still not chanting the holy names of Krishna very properly or very well. You see devotees chanting their rounds, and the quality of the chanting is not very good. Right? Now, it is necessary to learn to chant the name of Krishna with ruchi. This is Mahaprabhu's teaching, Nama Ruchi. Sometimes it is said that Lord Chaitanya's entire philosophy, his entire mission, can be brought down to 3 points: Nama Ruchi, Vaishnav Seva, and Jiva Doya. Nama Ruchi means taste for chanting. Ruchi means taste for chanting the holy name of Krishna. It means having taste for chanting. Not that chanting is something that we don't look forward to. But chanting should become the thing that we most look forward to. It is the most relishable part of our existence. That is called ruchi, that is called taste. So devotees need to cultivate that kind of taste while chanting the holy name. If you don't cultivate that kind of taste, at the time of death, it'll be very difficult to fix the mind upon Krishna. If it is mechanical, the chanting is mechanical, it'll be very difficult to fix the mind on Krishna. You're having difficulty fixing the mind on Krishna at this point in time. That's why the chanting is laborious or mechanical. So it is necessary for devotees to conscientiously develop a taste for chanting the holy name. Now, how do we get a taste for chanting the holy name? First of all, one has to learn to chant the holy name attentively, which means while we're chanting, we are just focusing upon the holy name. We're not distracted. You see, so many devotees become distracted while chanting. Sometimes I find it a little, odd that when people chant, they chant in the courtyard out here, right? During a busy time of the day when there's people walking. And you can see devotees aren't really listening to their chanting. They're distracted by everything which is going on around them. Right? Now, if you chant like that, it's going to be very hard to develop a taste for the holy name. Because you're not confronting your mind. Because the mind is very obstinate. It likes to be distracted. It likes to have constant entertainment. That's why people watch television. People watch television because it's just constant bombardment. You don't have to think, you just have to let yourself be entertained constantly. But chanting the holy name means you have to fix the mind on one point. And that is difficult for people to do. That's why they like to go somewhere where they can be distracted as much as they can. Even one of my friends, I was actually with him recently, and he chants his japa while watching the television. He chants his 16 rounds every day, which is fantastic. He chants his 16 rounds. He's a nice devotee. But he chants while watching the television, while watching the tennis, while watching the Australian Open. I'm like... So, it's not an advisable habit to chant in a distracted location, a distracting location like that. And especially in this temple, sometimes it does amaze me to a great extent why devotees don't come and chant in the temple room. You chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, right? Hare means Radharani, right? Krishna means Krishna, right? Balava, right? The person that you're chanting, that you're supposed to be fixing the mind upon, is here in the temple room. And you can come into the temple room and you can chant and you can have their darshan and you can bring your chanting, the name that you're chanting and the person who is you are calling, right, are both physically present. And still devotees don't come into the temple room and chant a lot of the time. They prefer to chant somewhere else. Or you have Prabhupada's room. Right? A pure devotee of Krishna, a Paramahamsa Vaishnava, someone who is a personal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Radha and Krishna, personally stayed in these rooms. Prabhupada travelled all around the world and established temples all over the world in so many cities in the world. And yet, I think we only have about 10 or 12 maybe places in the world where we actually have the physical location where Prabhupada stayed and resided. You go into that room up there, I mean, the energy is so powerful. It's not an ordinary place. I like to go there by myself, right, sometimes. Not as often as I'd like to, or often as I should. But I like to go there because the energy in that room is so powerful. So you have a place like that to chant, you have a place like this to chant, and still people would like to go and chant in front of the notice board. You see devotees out there chanting the japa, looking at the notice board, reading the posters, right, going to all the different posters. Right? So what are you doing? Are you reading the notice board, or are you chanting your japa? Or you see devotees, they're chanting their japa while they're reading the deity roster. Right? You're not even on the deity roster. Your name is not even there. So you see devotees, they're just looking at the deity roster and chanting the japa. Like, what are they doing? So you will not develop a taste for chanting the holy name as long as you chant in a distracted fashion. So we have to learn to chant attentively. That is the first element of developing a taste for the holy name. Now, Lord Chaitanya also teaches us how to develop further taste for the holy name. Because if you look at his mission, which is summarized as Nam Ruchi, Jiva Doya, and Vaishnav Seva, you see that these other two elements, they directly develop taste for chanting the holy name. Vaishnav Seva. Vaishnav Seva means serving the devotees. So the more that we serve Krishna's devotees, the more that we please Krishna's devotees, the more that we invoke the blessings of Krishna's devotees, the more Krishna will give us taste for chanting the holy name. It's reciprocal. I know for myself, when I do more service with the right attitude, the more I serve Krishna with the right attitude, the more I try to please, although I'm not very good at it, but the more I try to please Krishna's devotees, right, with the right attitude, somehow, mystically, more taste for chanting the holy name comes. So it is related. Lord Chaitanya is saying, Vaishnav Seva, Nam Ruchi. And Jiva Daya. Jiva Daya means giving Krishna consciousness to the conditioned souls. The more one engages in that activity, mystically, one develops more taste for chanting the holy name also. And that is the goal of life, because that is what will be tested at the time of death. Right? Your sadhana will be tested at the time of death. Right? Think about the way we chant our japa a lot of the time. Right? A lot of times, like, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. So what are you going to do at the time of death? No? You're at the time of death and you're going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. It's not really going to work, right? It's not going to have a great effect at the time of death. So therefore, one has to work on chanting the holy name. Because at the time of death, that's what will be tested. How you chant. And I was reading the other day, Prabhupada said, there's that little calendar that every day you turn over, you know, different calendars which are there you turn over every day. And there's a quote by Srila Prabhupada. So I read one that he said the other day. He said, when you chant, automatically the pastimes of Krishna should come into your mind. Right? It should come into your mind. As soon as you say, Hare Krishna, right? The pastimes of Radha and Krishna should flood into the mind if one is developed in one's chanting. That is actually what we're aiming for in our chanting, to remember Krishna. Remember Krishna means Lila Smaranam. Prabhupada says when you're chanting, the pastimes are just coming into your mind, one after another after another. That's actually what we're aiming for in our chanting. You can say, well, that's advanced. So what do you want to do? Do you want to become a neophyte forever? Do you want to just be a neophyte devotee forever? You say, well, I'm not that advanced. So when will you become advanced? Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, says that after 15 or 20 years of being a devotee, one should take interest in hearing the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. If you've been following the process sincerely for a number of years, naturally, one should want to understand more advanced topics. One should become qualified to understand more advanced topics. One should have cleared the contamination from the heart so that one can understand more advanced topics. This is the point of chanting. So at the time of death, we are remembering Krishna's pastimes. We are chanting the holy name. Krishna's pastimes are fixed within our consciousness. Then Krishna says, if you remember my pastimes at the time of death, where will you go? He said, you will come to me. So this is the entire process of Krishna consciousness. We are meant to chant the holy name sincerely, and we are meant to fix our consciousness on Krishna's pastimes. So these other places in the Bhagavatam, these other points in the Bhagavatam about hearing about destruction and about creation are meant to develop detachment within our consciousness. We hear about the destruction of matter, we hear about the creation of matter, because our body is also made of matter. So that at the time of death, when we hear about this destruction, when we hear about this creation, we understand this is also taking place in my own body. My body is made of the same elements that this universe is made of. This universe is created, it is destroyed. My body is created, it is destroyed. So we become detached from the material world. And then, with that detachment, then you can become attached to Krishna fully. Otherwise, it's difficult to become fully attached to Krishna as long as you're still attached to something else in this material world. And whatever you're attached to at the time of death, that's what will come into your mind. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Decreasing lust the sign of
increasing
interest in spiritual topics?
Yeah, Prabhupada says in the Krishna book, in the pastimes of the gopis with Krishna, meeting with Krishna, chapters 29 to 34 of the Bhagavatam, when Krishna meets with the gopis, Prabhupada explains in that section, he says that the proof of our Krishna consciousness is the material desires are decreasing and the spiritual attachment to Krishna is increasing. So we should feel that while the attachment to Krishna is increasing, that the material desires are becoming less. We should feel that taking place. Now, if we're on the platform of anatta nivritti, which means we're clearing the anattas from our heart, it means that sometimes we'll feel like it goes back the other way. It feels like the material energy becomes stronger, the material desires become stronger, and Krishna's attachment to Krishna becomes less. So then we have to try very hard to bring it back the other way. So it takes time for it to. But you should feel, as years go by, you know, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, like that, practicing devotional service, then you should feel that the material desires are decreasing over that time. Year by year, you have to look back and see, is it working? Is the process working? The process will work if we apply ourselves properly. If we're practicing devotional service and the material desires are not decreasing, it means we're not properly applying ourselves to the process, that's all. Because if you chant attentively, if you follow all of the etiquettes properly, and if you perform devotional service properly, as is described by the previous acharyas and the spiritual master, then you'll get the result. It is sure. Does that answer you? Okay. Any other question? Seven elements which make up the material world. Does it say which specifically? Which seven? What's that?
Seven basic elements of creation.
Yeah, because there's eight basic elements. Because the material, the universe which we're in now, it has eight coverings, which is earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. So maybe they're not including ego there or something. I'm not sure. Why it says seven, I'm not sure. No. Because generally we say there's eight material coverings. Okay. Any other question or comment?
One comment is about Haridas Thakur, he was saying chanting. Haridas Thakur, he had a real case. He could drive away the prostitute and make her a devotee. That's why Mahaprabhu called him Namacharya.
And it's interesting because in the Prema Dwani prayers, which we recite every morning or after every kirtan, then we say Hari Namacharya Shala Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. So Prabhupada emphasizes this particular, and it is emphasized in our tradition, this particular acharya. Because by his mercy, Prabhupada explains, one can develop taste for chanting the holy name. So we should regularly meditate and beg for the mercy of Haridas Thakur. Especially in this age, because Nam Sankirtan is the Yuga Dharma. Any other question or comment?
I was just thinking that when you said William and Kate has become the monk, Prabhupada was trying to teach them that. Just thinking that
too bad the name's not Radha Krishna. Yeah, but she's saying, because Hare means Radharani, so she's saying, too bad that we're not chanting Radha Krishna, Radha Krishna.
No, so that's
not saying that, sorry.
We're talking about William and Kate's marriage, right?
What's that?
He said that.
William and Kate's marriage.
And who was talking about that?
Yeah.
So this,
oh, okay.
So the
it's too bad that Radharani and Krishna are not getting married next week.
No, their names are not
Radha. Oh, their names. Their names are not Radha. Okay, that's good. Okay, that's a good point. That Will and Kate's names are not Radha and Krishna. That Will and Kate's names are not Radha and Krishna. That's why when we get initiated, then we get the spiritual names. So whenever anyone hears our name, they get purified. Someone gets the name Krishna Das, then whenever someone says Krishna Das, they get the benefit like that. So maybe one day the world will become like that once again. Any other question or comment? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.